fit for me to support, or he's unfit. But it will be based upon my own intelligent judgment that I arrive at by studying his good points and his bad points, his weak points and his strong points. I will not let a politician or anybody else turn me against a man that I have intelligently supported by simply telling me that he's not doing for me today what he promised to do 5 years ago, 4 years ago, or what he was doing yesterday. I want to know what are the circumstances. What are the circumstances that have changed the situation? And when I understand those circumstances and President Carter is still looking bad in my eyes, then I will say no to Carter, and I will look for someone else. No, pardon me, I will find someone else, and then I'll say no to Carter. I can't say no to him until I find someone else. You know, it's like having a wife, you know. You don't say no to your wife if you don't have a wife. You better be sure that you can get another one before you say no to the one you got. Because it's lonely, man. You know? So if the one I got ain't too bad, I'd rather keep her until I find one better. And then if she's, I say, well, I have to part from this lady because she just doesn't measure up in any way and she's going to drag me down, down, down. So I get my eye on the other lady. Then I tell her, bye-bye. And you do that too. You don't even pick a boyfriend until you find another one. Or something that interests you. Yeah. So we have to find someone else before we put down President Carter. Now, I didn't come here to campaign for President Carter. I came here to campaign for you. And if we can collect our intelligence and can move together intelligently in the community on all the issues, even the issue of whether President Carter is fit to deserve our support again or not. We have to have intelligent understanding, intelligent cooperation in order to survive as a community or as a society of people. Dear beloved brothers and sisters, when we study Bilalians, African Americans, as a people, we find that we have a peculiarity that other people don't have. What is that peculiarity? It is that church personality we have. It is that church personality. Most of the Bilalian people pick preachers who can excite them emotionally. Not the preacher who can help them solve their personal and community problems. They pick the preacher who can bring about the most commotion in the church. And believe me, we pick our political leaders the same way. We pick the political leader who can entertain us the best. Oh, I really like him. Yes, what is it about him that you like so much? Oh, I don't know. He touched my heart. Does he touch your brain? Oh, I just love him. He's so sweet. You know, the reason why the Honorable Elijah Muhammad don't have more people continuing in the good, sensible life that he awakened us to is because too many of us were not identifying with him in knowledge. We were identifying with him in emotion. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he hated white people. I hate them too, Elijah. You my man. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad loved black. I'm black, I love black too. Honorable Elijah Muhammad, that's my man. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad love money. I love money too. That's my man. Yes. We fail to follow the knowledge. We follow the personality on the strength of emotionalism. On the strength of emotionalism. So the consequence of that is that if that man dies, your movement dies. If you are attached to a leader in emotionalism and not in a knowledge context, when that leader dies, your movement dies. If you were attached to that leader, or identifying with him in a knowledge context, when he died, you continue to live. But if you have no more identity with him than emotionalism, love for him, love for what he said, and not understanding of what he said, baby, when he died, your movement died. Can't you see how come now we don't survive? Our leaders don't survive? Our leaders are for a time period. And that time period is hardly longer than their physical individual life on this earth. Look how soon the movement of Dr. King went down. Yes, Dr. King, great civil rights leader, but most of his followers identified with him in the emotional context and not in the knowledge context. Same for the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, the same for Malcolm X in most instances, although there are a few people on the college campuses and a few in politics and a few other places who identified with the strategy of Malcolm X and identified also with the economic strategy of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. But they represent a very, very small number, very, very small number of no real consequence. The great majority of people who see Malcolm X as a hero, or the Honorable Elijah Muhammad as a hero, or Dr. Martin Luther King as a hero, they identify with them in the emotional context and not in a knowledge context. What am I getting at? We must have a simple knowledge base that all of us identify with, live in, and progress in. A simple knowledge base. We will never come out of this sad situation, this sad predicament that we're in, until we can identify in a knowledge context. When the African Americans were held in the church doctrine, there was more unity of African Americans than there is today. I'm not saying go back to the church. I'm a Muslim. The church is behind me. The mosque is in front of me. So I wouldn't dare tell anybody to go back to the church. If you are out of the church, then come to the mosque. But I'm saying, and this is a fact, that those who identify with the church and with the church doctrine, who live the morals and the spirit and the principles of the church, they were more united than we are today. In 1980, the church is not as popular as it was in 1950. In 1980, the church is not influencing our lives to the great extent that it influenced our lives in 1950. This deserves your attention, brothers and sisters. We want to solve problems, don't we? Don't we want to solve our problem? To solve our problem, we must look at those developments that give us information. And I'm telling you, this exodus from religious principles revealed to us an exodus from community-based concerns. We have left community-based concerns. Too many of us want to be on his own private island, doing his own private thing. Too many of us can give up the natural love for a woman, or the natural love for a man, the natural love for children, and just give ourselves to a career of just having a lot of fun. Too many of us have left community-based concerns just to have a big time, to have a good time, to have a big blowout, to have a ball. And if we ask the people, come back to community-based concerns, come back to concerns that will elevate all of us, you can't hardly get their attention, because everybody have been made so selfish that each goes in his own way and care less for humanity, less for his family life, less for the neighborhood. He cares less for the nation. He's only interested in the immediate thing for himself. This is our problem. The problem is not a reduction in the welfare allotment. The problem is not a reduction of jobs. That's a problem. That's a real problem. But let me tell you, baby, we have a problem that is taking us down, and it didn't start today. We were down in the 30s. Every time the nation suffers, we drop down. We can only live when all of the circumstances are favoring us. We can only make it when everything is rosy. The least little trouble bring all of us down to a terrible headache. Oh, we are suffering. Tell Carter he has to do something because we are suffering. Tell him that black people are suffering. What about the Hispanics? What about the Chicanos? Aren't they suffering? But they don't have our peculiarity. The Chicanos are suffering, but they are also working. They are not satisfied to just complain. They want to do something. So they work. Most of the Chicanos are the Hispanic people. They say, we are going to survive. They have a determination to survive. They have a desire to work for their people, for posterity. They are not just working for themselves as individuals. I have worked on jobs with Chicanos, and most of them work for posterity. Most of us work for Friday nights. Most of us, I repeat, we work for Friday night or Saturday. That's right. Yes. Now, you know, nobody here but family. So let us talk about the problem. The problem is we do not live for posterity. We do not live for posterity. We live for ourselves alone, and we forget about the coming generation. Will welfare be around here forever? In asking for more welfare, I'm not saying you shouldn't ask for it. Ask for it, because we don't have jobs. We need it. Don't stop asking for welfare. Stop asking for programs in the city. We need them. We want the city revitalized. We want the urban programs to be effective, and to be effective, they have to be funded with big sums. We want that. But these are temporary solutions to problems that come and go. When industry enjoys a boom again, there won't be a need to beg for welfare. So shouldn't we be preparing our minds for more than just a response for more than just a reaction, pardon me, for more than just a reaction to problems? Shouldn't we be preparing our minds for long-range programs? Dear beloved people, you can't do this living a life of uncertainty, living a life of random thought, living a life of intellectual just fluttering about freedom and unconcern. No, you have to focus in, beam in on an idea that will give unity to your life. You have to focus in on some idea that will give unity and purpose to your life. If you don't have an idea that will give unity and purpose to your life, then you are like dust in the air. You are like the dry leaf that falls off the tree. It's going to be beaten about by the wind. It cannot decide where it's going to be tomorrow. The wind decides where it's going to be tomorrow. But if you focus in on an idea that unify and give the direction and purpose to your life, you are like a tree. The leaves fall, but the tree stands. And it waits for the better season, and it produces abundant leaves and fruit again. Yes, we need permanence. Dear people, we need permanence. The church is no longer giving us that kind of stability. The church is no longer giving us that kind of focus, that kind of vision, that kind of anchorage. The church has died. The church is dead. Let me repeat, the church is dead. And if all you got going for you is Christianity, you are dead. The love of Christ, the love of your fellow man is not enough. There are many people who are over the hills in love with Christ and their fellow men, and they end these mental institutions. That's not enough. You have to have yourself grounded in some knowledge. Knowledge that gives unity to your life. Knowledge that gives focus and purpose to your life. Knowledge that gives direction to your life. Not just for today, but for posterity. What am I advocating? Say, Imam, what are you advocating? I am advocating a philosophy of life for the African Americans who have never been united in a philosophy of life. We have never been united in a philosophy of life. We've always been carried upon the emotional winds of Christianity. Love for Christ, Christ love me. We need more than that. That kind of emotionalism will not sustain us. We need rational knowledge. We need to understand more about ourselves than just I am a human being. We need to know the scientific language that go along with that emotional statement, I am a human being. And when you get the scientific language that goes along with that emotional statement, I am a human being, you won't have to tell people you are a human being. They will be the witnesses that you are a human being, and you won't be having your future tied to the circumstances of the politics of America. I don't care if Carter come in or out. I'm going to be in, baby. I'm in. He can be in or out. I am in. The Democrats can be in or they can be out. I am in. Do you think the Irish would have overcome the discrimination that they suffered in this country when they came here? Do you think the Irish would have overcome the discrimination that they suffered when they came to this country if they had been united in no more than the love of Christ? Ain't nobody operating the world that have nothing but the love of Christ. If that's all he got, he's down here with you, baby, suffering without direction, without a future. If you want direction in your life, if you want a future, you have to have more than the love of Christ. You have to have more than the love of God. You have to have more than the love of Muhammad. You have to have some knowledge. Dear beloved people, we have many examples that we can call upon or refer to show you what moved people ahead. Moses was a great prophet. Do you think he advanced his people and brought them culture and brought them nationhood with just the love of Christ? Moses brought his people a great body of knowledge to live by. Do you think, brothers and sisters, that Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him and the righteous servants of God, who was able to unite people who were living in a backward society, who were living as immoral animals almost, do you think that he was able to unite those people in a culture, unite them in a community life, unite them in a context of nationhood, and advance them and progress them? Do you think he was able to do that by simply telling them to love God? Love God, that's the beginning. You know, when the baby is born, the baby opens the eyes. Right? Well, the love of God is just opening the eyes after you get out of your mother's womb. After you open your eyes, you should start taking notes. You should start learning something. Yes. Oh, I love God. That's just like the baby coming out of the mother's womb and open the eyes. Oh, his eyes are open. The baby can see. The black people love God. They are newborn babies with their eyes just open. That's not enough. It's not enough to say my religion is Christianity, and it's the religion of Christianity is based upon the principle that God gave his only begotten son so that the world will be saved by his blood through his sacrifice, the sacrifice of his life. That's not enough. That only inspired in me a desire to love people. I need knowledge to live with people. I need knowledge to deal with people. I need knowledge to guide myself, my family, my community. I need knowledge to survive with. I just can't have love of Christ. Dear beloved people, we don't have to all be Muslims. But let me tell you something. We all are Muslims by nature. Some of us don't know it, but we all are Muslims by nature. However, in your conscience, in your rational conscience, you don't have to identify as a Muslim. You can identify as a Christian. I identify as a Muslim. But we together, because I'm Bilalian, or African American, and you, being Christian, you too are Bilalian, or African American, we together complain together. Don't we complain together? Oh, yes. We all complain together. We say, Miami is a race issue. Right? We all complain together. We say our economic inferiority among the other nations, among the other nationalities in America, is a race issue. Don't we? We say our inferiority, our inferior position in science, in industry, in education, is because of a race issue. Isn't that what we say? Now, we are tied together, Muslim African American and Christian African American. We are tied together in a complaint. We all say we are at the bottom because we are racially persecuted. because we are treated unfairly as a race of people in America. Isn't that what we say? Now, all we need is animal sense. If any trouble hit a lot of animals, those animals begin to react the same way. They look like they got the same program. If any trouble hit all the animals alike, those animals respond in a way that show that they all have the same problem. Now, if we got the same complaint, how come we don't have a program to deal with the problem that we are suffering? If we all got the same complaint, how come we are not united in a strategy to eliminate these complaints? Huh? You are being told that we don't need unity. You are being told that we don't need leadership. You are being told, oh, don't listen to those Muslims. They want everybody under them. Isn't that the case? Yes, that's the case. You are being told that we don't need unity, that we don't need leaders. You are being told that each one should do his own thing, that each party, each organization should work in their own area, do their own thing. We are not encouraged to come together, put our heads together, NAACP, Urban League, and all the other civil rights organizations and community organizations push the American Muslim Mission, formerly called the Nation of Islam. We are not told to all come together and decide upon a strategy that will benefit all of us, a strategy that will work for all of us. We are discouraged. We are not encouraged to do that. We are told that we don't need that kind of unity. How come? It is because selfish plantation spirit still is dominating the mind of the African people in this country. Selfish plantation spirit is still dominating the thinking of the African American in this country. Everyone wants his own soapbox. Everyone wants his own pulpit. No one wants to come under another one. They all want to be chiefs with equal rank. Equal rank. Look, there's a president of the United States, and ain't nobody else up there with him. He's at the top of the heap. And that's how come we have government. And that's how come we have success. And that's how come the nation keeps moving ahead. Because the people have enough sense to choose one to stand at the top of the heap. Yes. Oh, you want to be at the top of the heap. I wish I wasn't even in the heap. You are a hell of a people to live with. I wish I was out of the heat. I wish I was a pygmy in Africa somewhere. Yeah. It's not your fault. That's how come I stay with you. You might say, well, why don't you leave then, Imam? Why don't you leave and get the hell out of here and go on to the pygmy? Because, baby, I know it's not your fault. That old divisive plantation spirit was cultivated over a long period of time. Those races who want to dominate us and keep our whole population as a colony for them to exploit, they feed division in us. They're the ones who excited jealousy between us. They incite us to be jealous of each other. They want the Muslims to be jealous of Christian leaders. They want the Christian leaders to be jealous of Muslim leaders. They want the political leaders to be jealous of the imam. They want the imam to be jealous of the political leaders. I love Reverend Jackson. Yes, I love Vernon Jordan. I love Benjamin Hook. I love every Bilalian or every African-American who's trying to do something to improve the conditions or improve the lot of our people. They they are wasting their time trying to make me jealous, trying to make me hate our leaders. I love them. They are shocked when they see me come to the White House with the civil rights leaders. They say, you still coming? Don't you see you don't belong together? I know we are not seeing the same way. I know the civil rights leaders are not seeing this problem as I see it. I know they don't see the reality that I see. And that reality is this, that we need to be united as a people. I know they don't see it. They think that this is only a hustler's program. They think that life as a black person in America is a hustler's program. It's not a hustler's program. It's a philosopher's program. It's a scientist program. It's a political scientist program. It's an economic scientist program. It's a social scientist program. It's not a hustler's program. And it calls for a philosophy of life. It has to have more than emotionalism. We can't get the people together by telling them that we're all black. Each year has weakened that slogan or that charged word. Yes, that's what it is, a charged word. Each year, each generation has weakened that charged word. We're all black. Because each generation has made us less black. Yes. I guess that Nat Turner was very more effective with the term than we are. When he said we are black, I believe that he was more effective. Because there was more black in us in Nat Turner's day. Yes. And I believe when Garvey said, we are black, I believe he was more effective than the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, because there was more black in us in Garvey's day than in the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's heyday. And I know the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was more effective when he said we are black than Farrakhan is today saying we are black. Because the generations are making us less black. We are becoming more knowledge. We are becoming more politics. We are becoming more civic. We are becoming more profession. We are becoming more economic. We are becoming more commerce. We are becoming more trade. We are becoming more global and less black with each generation. Today, trying to rally around black. I gave it up. I used to do it. You know me. Some of you don't, but some of you do. Oh, I used to get up and preach, and I preach a white man clean off the planet Earth. I preach him right out of natural existence. I drive him into a strange planet in the outer regions, a planet of mutates. I drive him out there where it's impossible for him to identify in the human circle. And I left nobody in the human circle but the black. And I said with pride, I'm a black man. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad is the leader for the black man in America. That's right. And by God, I preached that blackness, and I rallied many of you to that blackness, and many of you got your ex because Wallace D. Muhammad preached that sermon. Yes. Yes, but I have seen how we have grown less and less black, and how the call to blackness has grown less and less effective. Look what happened to that term in the last decade. In the last decade, the term has completely degenerated. It has become completely decadent. The term itself has become a rot, a decay, a thorough rot through and through. Can I prove it? Yes, I can. I know there are some people, some individuals, preaching blackness. I might have one up here with me today. Now, don't think I'm your enemy. My mother was blacker than any woman I see in here. Do you think I don't like my mother? I love my black mama. Her blackness was beautiful. Pretty black. Pretty black. To tell you the truth, the girl that I fell head over heels in love with was black, black, black. Black, baby. And it's hard to get away from her, too, I'm telling you. It's pretty hard to get away from her. That black girl was too much. Yes. But what I'm getting at is this. What I'm getting at is this. Blackness as a rallying call, a rallying point for us, has become so weak that it has now become a ruin on us. It has become a ruin on us. It is a germ for our social and moral decay. Yes. Oh, ma'am, how can you say that? What's wrong with this man? He's not black anymore. How can he say a black has become a germ for our social and moral decay? Look now in your community and identify those who say I'm black. Identify the loudest voice of blackness in your community. And you will find the most corrupt persons in your community. This is a fact. This is a fact. Garvey was a moral man. He wasn't corrupt. Garvey was a moral man. Frederick Douglass before him, great moral man. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad after them, a moral man. He preached black, but it had a moral philosophy attached to it. Is that right? Yes. Those who are preaching blackness among us now, they don't have a moral philosophy attached to their message. They're appealing to nothing but our racial sensitivity. They're just appealing to our racial sensitivity. And they are orchestrated by the same devil that's orchestrating the Klan and every other racist or divisive faction in this country. There is a strong scheme working in this country. And it has been working since this country was founded. A scheme to keep America from realizing its dream. What is that dream? A dream wherein every man, regardless to his racial or national origin or to his religious belief, his creed, will be respected the same and have equal opportunity in this country. It's a dream of a real, true democracy. Isn't that what it is? It's a dream wherein all people will be together and not be discriminated against or abused because of their religion or because of the color of their skin or their national origin. Isn't that the American dream? Where all people, all nationalities, all races will have equal access to the blessings of America. Isn't that the dream? Now let me tell you something. What brought this dream very close to our hands? Huh? What operated in the history of this nation to bring that dream so close we could almost touch it? We could almost kiss it. We could almost grasp it. It was the constitutional process of this country. It was the legislative process of this country. Is that right? Yes. Racism, discrimination based upon race and sex struck down by the law. Why? Because it is interpreted that the Constitution does not support that. It was interpreted that the Constitution does not support a divided America on racial lines, on the line of color recognition. Is that right? Yes. So discrimination against race was struck down. Struck down. Now discrimination against sex is being struck down because it's interpreted that that is again the lifeline or the basic fundamentals of the Constitution of these United States of America. How come today we are still short of reaching that goal? How come today it seems that we are regressing? We are falling back. We are getting away from that dream. It is because we are getting into an emotionalism and not sticking with rational steps for progress. Legislative process offers rational steps for progress. The lawyer, he has to be more than an emotional man. The lawyer has to be a rational strategist. Is that right? Yes. So the lawyer, following knowledge, following rational strategy, the lawyer was able to win freedom for us on the book. Is that right? He was able to win freedom and dignity for us on the book. Now, in order for us to enjoy the freedom that the lawyer won for us on the book, we also have to make rational steps of progress in the community. We have to have a program by which we make rational steps toward the goal we want this year, next 10 years, next 20 years, next 100 years. We cannot enjoy the blessings of America floating in the air of emotionalism, sentimentalism. No. Racist attitude, racist sensitivity cannot keep us in the line of progress as American people. This country is based upon the principle of the jungle. Do you know that? Now I'm talking to you and I'm moving on, I'm pressing, because I'm desperate. I see the goal right there. I can touch it. I know we can make it. I see victory. It's right there, man. I put spin on it. There's victory. Victory is right there. That is there. Now, I know victory is right there, but I can't reach you. I can't reach you. What kind of victory I'm talking about? Dignity. I'm talking about changing this sad economic picture wherein Bilalians are always at the bottom and begging somebody. We got more numbers than the Chicanos, but the Chicanos are moving fast up the ladder of economic progress. They are called bad breath people, garlic chewers, spics, and what they call the Spanish people, all kind of dirty names. But they are moving steadily up the economic scale. And every time the winds change in politics, we start falling out of the picture. Falling out of the picture. Because we don't have sense to live by. We don't have knowledge to live by. We must have knowledge to live by. And that's what I'm getting at. All right. Now, let me continue. Dear beloved people, Allah has blessed us. Who am I talking about? All of us. But in particular, I'm talking about the movement you used to call Black Muslims, the Nation of Islam, the World Community of Islam. I'm talking about that movement. Allah, Almighty God, has blessed us. The same Allah who blessed that young man of Jackson 5. What's his name? What's his name? The fellow who walks now. He had a miracle. Randy. That's right, Randy. The same Allah who blessed Randy. The same God who blessed Minister Imam Kamaluddin. Imam Kamaluddin was in his car, and a big semi-truck rammed the rear of his car. His car burst into flames. The cab of the truck burst into flames. Imam Kamaluddin was, by some miracle, blown outside of his car, fell upon his feet, and was running when he came to. He said he didn't remember anything until he came to. When he came to, he was running on his feet. He was knocked out of his shoes. His shoes was left in the car and burned up in the car. But he was knocked out of the car by the impact. And when he woke up, he was running on his feet. The same God that did that, the same Allah that gave legs back to Randy, that God have made us special in America for all of our people. Let me repeat that. Your Lord have made my community special in America for all African Americans. If you are not ready to be a Muslim, you are ready to follow the community program of Imam W.D. Muhammad. If you are not, then really you're not with it, baby. You're just altogether out of it. I offer sensible direction to people. I offer sensible focus on your identity. I don't tell you your identity is an African or your identity is a black man. That's your racial identity. Or that's your national identity, but you have another identity. What decides the success or the failure of an individual? Is it the fact he was born in Africa? Is it the fact he was born black? Or is it the fact he made good use of his human potential?